All right, welcome back. Today I have the pleasure of speaking to my good friend Nico Smith once more. I think I had Nico on back when the podcast was still supported by Swan. I think that was last year. Hello, Nico. How are you doing?
Hi, Jesse. I'm fine. And thanks for having me again. This is actually the third time. I think one was before Swan, then during Swan, and now after. So,
yeah.
So, I don't know if there's any, if there's any guests that's been on more, but might be setting a record here.
I think you're holding the sole record, my friend. Yeah. You, Nico, for those who have not come across you, run Digital Mining Solutions, a platform consulting agency. You run masterclasses, you write newsletters, you look at the hash price just as often as I do. Give people a bit of a rundown, spotlight, 2 minutes on what you do and what your company tries to achieve.
Yeah, sure. So I started Digital Mining Solutions 4 years ago, and we have a big emphasis on strategic advice or consulting. Providing advice to investors and miners that want to start and scale in the industry. And we revise business cases, optimize pitch decks, we evaluate investment opportunities. This year there's quite some institutional interest in mining coming from the TradFi sector. So building that bridge between hash price and other mining economics, that's for us is common jargon, let's say, but for others it's not that clear. So building that bridge between the TradFi and the mining space. And then we do a lot of market intelligence. So we have a popular newsletter, almost 14,000 subscribers now. And on a weekly basis, we look into mining economics, trends and insights in the industry. And provide masterclasses, but also tailored reports for third parties. So that's the core of the business. We do a bit of investor matchmaking or brokerage as well, usually as part of those consultancy trajectories. Been enjoying it very much, especially this year. It's been going very well.
Nice. So, that's really good to hear. Talking about all the metrics, let's see where we are on the block height at the moment. We are at 910,785. I recorded yesterday as well. And hash price has gone down a little bit from yesterday, 55.41.
Yeah.
And again, the most boring chart in Bitcoin, hash price in Bitcoin terms, we're at 49,000 sats per petahash per day. Nico, talking about metrics and all that good stuff, I want to start off there. I want to talk to you about the proto miner, and then I want to highlight some of the topics that you've recently covered in your premium version of the newsletter.
Sure.
That everybody should have a look at. The links will be in the description. And then we're just going to riff on the industry a little bit and see where we land. And I'd like some comments and thoughts on mining in South America as well, since that's kind of a black box for me. Oftentimes, yeah. It's something that I really don't know much about. And for those who don't know, Nico, you are located in South America still,
I
believe.
So you have in Buenos Aires. I'm Dutch, grew up in the Netherlands, but moved here almost 4 years ago. So.
Yeah, so you have a unique angle on that part of the world when it comes to our industry, and that is very interesting, I think. First question for you, Nico. Is right now a good time to buy ASICs? Yes, no, and why?
I do think it's a good time. It's very interesting to see that we're in a bull market, but prices of the miners have been quite low still. So in the previous cycle, especially 2021, we saw the prices of ASIC miners spike. There was a supply squeeze at that time. Now there's more miners are available, but also there's sort of dynamics going on, like more entrants in the market, like Proto recently, and also big buyers, right? So we have the top 10 PubCos that have around 30% of all the hash rate. So there's buyers that can suppress prices, and then at the same time we also see Bitmain pushing out new machines frequently, and I believe a big reason behind that is that they have access to chip weavers at semiconductors, and yeah, in order to keep that access to those chip weavers, they need to sell their miners and produce a certain amount of miners. So I think it's a good time because it's the price is cheap. It's not too long ago it was the cheapest it's ever been on a per terahash basis, and I also think it's a good time to buy miners because we've seen the efficiency going lower and lower. Now we're sub 20 joules per terahash, reaching or coming close to 10 joules per terahash. So I think the efficiency gains on the ASIC level will slow down in the coming years. And therefore, I think the life cycle of the lifespan, the economic lifespan of these machines will become longer, and there's less of a need to upgrade fleets just for the efficiency level.
This episode is sponsored by Hashbranch, the easiest way to mine Bitcoin in the US. Sourcing hardware and rack space usually is a mess. Bad deal structures, misaligned incentives, and no visibility after deployment. I have placed tens of thousands of ASICs in partnership with Hashbranch. What I like most is that they cut through the noise. Fair pricing, aligned terms, and access to hosting that actually works. Use code HASHRATEUP100, visit hashbranch.com today to get $100 off of each miner that you order. I put out a, I'm going to share this quickly, and you just reminded me of the last point that I wanted to make there, but didn't. I put out, because I think it's, I share the same view. I think right now it's a good time to buy machines because also in bit price, if you price them in Bitcoin and you have an interest in investing your opportunity cost of just buying Bitcoin and making more Bitcoin than you can buy today, right? You got to look at how much Bitcoin do I need to mine to surpass my CapEx investment. Anyway, so the three reasons that I listed here were transaction fees being super low. I mean, they can only go up from here. The ASIC prices, and I see there's an error there. ASIC prices in Bitcoin terms are super low. The network difficulty growth dynamics right now tell me that it's very tough for the network to grow by, I don't know, 50%, 100% from a basis of 900 or 1,000 exahash.
Yeah.
And then the fourth point that you just mentioned is efficiency, right? We're not going to see efficiency gains of 40 to 15 joules per T anymore. The efficiency gains on a percentage basis are going to be much, much smaller, right?
Yeah.
So, and I'm struggling to understand why, I'm trying to find the other side, right? Why is it not a good time to buy machines? And I have a tough time figuring out a reason.
If you buy now, you still have quite some time in this cycle, right? Before we head into the new... for the next halving. So if you deploy now, you should be able to have a return on your investment before the next halving. If you don't, then I think you should look for another site or another opportunity. But I still think there's enough time before the next halving, which makes it also an interesting period to start now.
For sure. Nico, where does hash rate go from here? What do you think?
Up only, yeah. That's the
up only, but how fast?
Yeah. So if you look at the amount of exahashes that were deployed in a nominal term, we're quite on par with last year. Although there's been a slowdown over the summer months, which has to do with the heat waves in North America. But also, I believe like the summer is also slow because people are just on a holiday and working less. But you see this seasonality more and more in the summer. On this chart, if you zoom that much out, it doesn't seem like it's slowing down. But
No, it's not. Yeah, but that's what I'm trying to find difficulty.
Yeah, so if you look at difficulty, last year we saw a 4.4% month-over-month increase. This year it's 2.4. So on a nominal term, you see that growth is quite in line with what we saw last year. But then obviously on a percentage basis, that looks different, because if you add 100 exahashes to 700 exahashes, that has a different percentage impact than when you add 100 exahashes to 800 exahashes, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. You got to grow bigger at the same pace to keep up, right? And I just have trouble, again, seeing the other side, like where does all that power come from? Where does all that energy come from? Now that we have AI competition as well.
Yeah, so you see these big power blocks, they're being soaked up by AI HPC. So there is a competition, real competition for power. But at the same time, you see hash rate growing globally. So more countries are being open to mining. Miners are looking for that stranded energy, for that abundant energy worldwide now. That does increase the hash rate. But I believe these mega sites will be less common. You'll see more and more smaller sites at places where AI HPC has trouble establishing because of downtime or no fiber optics.
Here's another thing that I throw in the mix: the amount of used machines that we have. I think that's also something new, right? Never before have we had this volume of used ASICs that was still being redeployed. Or do you think that's a misconception?
No, the amount of machines is more, obviously, because the industry grew and there's just more ASICs that were produced. But I also think, like, currently you see this S19J Pro generation. They're very cheap, and sometimes it makes more sense to deploy these machines because you have a quicker ROI. Like, you can also, if you build out a new site, put the latest generation in for part, and then the other placeholders use to deploy this less efficient machines that have a quick ROI, and then gradually upgrade. So I think these used machines are a tool also, and many of these machines have also found their ways to countries where energy is cheap and maybe the risk to deploy a lot of capital is a bit higher.
Fair enough. Okay, cool. What do you think about the new ProtoMiner, Nico?
Yeah, I kind of I nerd out a bit, like looking at the launch live, you know, like. I think that's it's cool to see that there's such a launch. You know, it says something about where the industry is. My first reaction was why the shoebox format? You know, like that. I was like, why did they stick to that? But I was listening to an interview, and there they mentioned that they didn't want to have these operators deal with big retrofitting of their rack space, so they chose that shoebox format because it fits current infrastructure, which I found quite interesting. Interesting approach. Yeah, smart. Yeah. Also, I think it's very interesting the emphasis they have on the quick repairs. Right, so you can get these fans off very easily. The hash boards can be upgraded and replaced easily. So it's all, a lot of parts can be replaced without tools. And what I find interesting about the hash boards is that you can upgrade your fleet hash board by hash board. So you can have different generations of hash boards in one machine. So,
have you figured out a way to quantify the efficiency gain when you operate these machines, right? So here's what I'm thinking. This is a 14 joule per T machine. Yeah, it's a 14 point T joule machine. We don't know what it costs, right? But the idea is it's probably got to be more on the expensive side, because the idea is you don't have to replace anything but the hashboards going forward, right? So the chassis, the fans, the PSU, you keep all of that forever or 10 years or whatever they say. But what I'm saying is you get a Bitmain Machine S21 Pro on paper. That thing has maybe 15 joule per T, right? You get a Watts Miner that you need to touch five times less over the course of 5 years. Yes, on paper, it's less efficient. But if you look at the hours that you have it in operation, it's actually going to yield you more money for the investment. And so what I'm trying to figure out is there a way to quantify the efficiency gain in operating a protominer that doesn't require you to take it home to change a fan? Yeah. And add that kind of to the efficiency calculation, right? Because at the end of the day, that's what we care about, is how efficient was the machine while it was on the racks over the last 2 years, and not what's on paper.
Yeah, I think you can, but you need time to gather that data. I do see that that repairs do have an impact on that uptime. So I do see the philosophy, but it's going to depend on the price, as you said, also, because maybe if you if it's too expensive, then you can better just swap a machine right away and have spare machines on site. But I like and I appreciate the approach that they went out to miners and looked what are they struggling with in operations and how can we solve for that. You see that with Auradine also, that they have that approach. They listen to miners, they listen to operators, and try to adapt their machines in such a way that it makes it user-friendly. And I think that's the biggest gain that we've seen with this new launch.
Interesting. Yeah, I'm also very curious. I mean, it's a big fat gap in the market that I feel like was just filled. You know, how I was asking this to the Wilson Mining guys yesterday, like, how has nobody until now thought about making fans hot swappable?
Yeah.
You know, it's such an obvious thing. Yes. And then the answer was yes, Bitmain does, and MicroBT don't have to care because they don't operate the machine. They just want to sell it. But I'm thinking anybody who buys thousands of machines and they can choose whether they can just quickly swap the fans or not, will probably choose that, because it's such an operational gain. It's such a game changer, that alone.
Definitely.
It saves you so much money.
Auradine has the PSU also that you can swap easily. So they saw that for the first time. But the fans are the number one failure point of these air-cooled machines, right? So it makes sense to make it easy to swap. And also the PSUs on these machines don't have the little fans that the Bitmain machines have. So the PSUs are being cooled by the fans that cool the hashboards. So that's also interesting that they have less points of failure, which I think is good.
Cool. Nico, quickly jumping through the next topic. One thing that I found really that stuck out to me was the 144 blocks discussion that you've recently opened up. Everybody, when they calculate, they always think, there's 144 blocks, 10 minutes, every 10 minutes, 6 times 24, 144 blocks a day. But that's rarely the case, right? Go into that a little bit and explain why it's important that it's actually very rare that we find 144 blocks every day.
Yeah, so I didn't start a discussion, but I saw it on X. So there was recently a day with 144 blocks, and then the question was posed, like how many times did that happen? And I believe it was 125 times. So it's really a small percentage of the blocks of the days. Let's say that you have exactly that 144 blocks. And why it's important, or why I brought it up, has to do with the pools. Many pools calculate their payouts based on these standard 144 blocks. So yeah, if there's more blocks being mined in a day, like what happens to that spread, let's say. So I think there's more and more awareness of how the dynamics behind the pools work. And I, yeah, my intention of bringing this up was that the people look a bit more behind the curtains. How are rewards being calculated, and are they actually getting what they're supposed to get?
I think it was Agustin Krupka of Demand who also mentioned, look, if you look at the hash price, like we have been doing in the beginning of the show on Lux's page, right? That thing is based on 144 blocks a day. But if there's only 142 or 140 blocks, then that difference doesn't go to the customer, right? Most likely not. And so it's very, very good to understand these things. When it comes to modeling, because all of these differences make all these small things make a big difference at the end.
Yeah, so it's as a hash rate goes up, blocks are found quicker than they're supposed to, and that's why you see these difficulty increasements. So in many cases, it's more blocks than 144 that are being mined. Yeah. But then if it's calculated on at 144, then yeah, you're missing out on revenue.
You're right, yeah.
And I mean, if you have a couple of machines, you probably don't see the difference, or you hardly feel it because it's a couple of sets. But if your fleet grows and grows, then these small percentages that you miss out on have a big impact. So,
HashRateUp is sponsored by solomining.de, the place to buy open source home and solo mining devices like the BitX. With about 20 watts of usage, these solo mining devices are perfect to play the lottery from home or from the office. Get 5% off with the code HashRateUp. Thanks to the legends at solomining.de for sponsoring the content.
For sure.
Then you talked about Ethiopia phasing out mining. That also perked my attention. You want to go into that a little bit and explain?
Yeah, this is from an article I read and that I dove into. I think what's happening in Ethiopia is a bit similar to what we've seen in Paraguay, right? Like in Paraguay in 2022-23, there was really a gold rush. Many miners went into Paraguay and set up shop there. And all of a sudden, abundant energy that's being produced, like there's some pressure on that grid, let's say. And I think you see the same in Ethiopia, I believe it was last year that, I don't have the numbers straight, but I think it was like 600 megawatts that was deployed in 1 year, which is a lot. So it just puts the spotlight on the industry, and it puts pressure on politicians and utilities and generators, and they need to come up with answers, let's say, to the people. And I think the message there was that they would not engage with new contracts, but somewhere between the lines, it was also mentioned that they would phase out current contracts. Well, I've spoken to some miners in Ethiopia. They didn't seem too worried. So I think I think it's a sign of the market reaching a bit its saturation. And
What do you mean by the market reaching saturation?
This big gold rush, let's say. Everybody piles on, and all of a sudden there's more PPA signed than that there's power available.
So I think I would slightly take the other side on this and see where we come out, right? So I think one of the key differences to Paraguay, and you correct me if I'm wrong, is that a lot of the mining in Ethiopia can take place on the substations themselves, right? So a lot of the mining happens there versus outside of the grid, where it then would actually put strain on the grid. A lot of the miners that came in early, mostly Chinese and Russian, they went close to the capital city, right? Mm-hmm. Addis. Whenever we talk to people back then when it started, January last year, or January this year, they would always tout the fact that they were close to the airport. And then I was already like, but you don't want to be close to the airport because that's where all the power consumption is. And that's where you're going to be curtailed the soonest, right? So yeah. You want to be as remote as possible in the middle of nowhere, near hydro dams where there's not a lot of consumption. And then you want to mine on a substation. And I think there's still a lot of room to grow for Ethiopia. So I'm hoping that it will not turn out that way. I'm really hoping that, you know, the officials and the government and whoever else is involved with these illegal contracts and everything, I hope that doesn't happen. I see a certain level of corruption, which sort of opens the door for the government to crack down on mining. But with the people that I know on the ground that are like heavily educating the local politicians and everything, mm-hmm. I really hope we go the other way, where education actually reaches a point where they realize how much power they have in their hands, because there's so much more energy. There's so much more power generation in place and no transmission, and so many more substations that have overcapacity. I think Ethiopia is very ripe to make big steps to become an even bigger mining country. Mm-hmm. But you never know, right? I mean, would I deploy there? I'm actively considering it. But that's the key worry. Like, you want your ROI quick, you know? You don't want your ROI in 15 months. You got to be kind of under a year to feel comfortable, I feel like, to make it work. But I'm hoping that it will not turn out the way Paraguay did.
No, so I'm not necessarily saying it will. I'm just saying, like, the similarities I see is that the industry grew very fast, and all of a sudden there's a lot of questions about it, you know, and that forces people to have an opinion and for results in this discussions and statements being made. So it remains to be seen what's going to happen. But that's the similarity that I see with Paraguay.
Let's say you had $500,000 to deploy into mining, Nico.
Yeah.
How would you do it?
Yeah, I 500,000. Yeah, like, I'm not a big fan of just putting your machines in hosting facilities. It might be profitable now, but for how long? So with 500,000, I would try to go for a JV with an operator and invest in a mining container and a transformer, put some of my own miners and see if I can co-locate some investors in that container. That's what I would do.
Okay, so you would buy the hardware versus the machines?
Yeah, so I would invest in the data center and in the transformer to get access to cheaper power, right? So that's the goal, let's say. And make use of that power by selling to investors.
All right. Last but not least, Nico, let's talk about South America. I mean, Paraguay, I feel like if you're not running big engines, and you're listed on the NASDAQ, I feel like it's very tough to make work. I think power prices have gone up. Maybe give us an update on Paraguay itself, like where we are there now, if you can. And then let's talk about South America in general and where you see the most adoption and growth.
Yeah, so in Paraguay, the biggest news items you see coming out is, I think, from Hive. They acquired a big site of bit farms that was in the process of being built out. And now they start... energizing little by little parts of this facility. So that's the biggest part of the hash rate being added, I think. I don't see that appetite from foreign investors into Paraguay anymore that was there a couple of years ago. It's been going quite steady, I would say. So there's not a big inflow of new miners, but there's also not a big exodus because when the government started to increase, or like the government owns the production there and the distribution. So when they started increasing electricity prices, many miners were threatening to go away, but I haven't seen that big exodus that was talked about. So it's quite kind of status quo, let's say. You see a lot of miners interested in Brazil. There's a lot of stranded power there. A lot of opportunities, a lot of PPAs being offered, but I haven't seen much of big deployments yet. People still dipping their toes, let's say. Brazil is a beast in itself. I used to work for the Ministry of Foreign Affairs and work with Dutch companies that wanted to do business in Latin America. And Brazil was always the country where they needed most support. It's for a foreign company, it's really challenging to do business there. But I think what's interesting about Brazil is that there's quite some capital within that country, right? It's the biggest country in South America. It has more than half of all the people that live on the southern continent here. So it's a big market, and there's quite some wealthy people that have an appetite to invest. So I think the growth that you will see there will mostly come from capital within. I live in Argentina. So here in Argentina, as we say, it's as complicado. It's also complicated. Everything is complicated in South America. But so growth here has not exploded yet, despite a liberal president. But most of the mining that you see here is that flared gas or associated gas, as they call it here. So that's gas that comes out when you extract oil. That's where you see most mining happening, or stranded gas. So gas that's being explored, but is not connected with pipelines. Recently, OnBlock had a new funding round, so they'll probably start deploying in the second half of this year. Then you have GDA here. But other than that, it's not hundreds of megawatts sites, let's say. The big site of Bitfarms ran into some problems, and they halted operations there. That had to do with the restructuring of the utility. So I'm curious to see if they follow through and really leave the country because they've been here for a while already. I think if you compare to Africa, where you're based, I see more happening in Africa than in Latin America. There's a lot of opportunities here, but it just goes slower than I would hope it will go.
What about Mexico?
Yeah, so Mexico, I've seen interest growing. I've never been there. Well, I've been there on holiday, but for mining, I've never been there. So I don't know much about it, about the country power-wise. I think it's very close to the US, right? So that might be a disadvantage. So, maybe an advantage, I don't know. But I'm aware of one miner there, one mining company, but other than that, if I think of Mexico, I think of safety, and the level of unsafety in Mexico is quite different from what you see here in Argentina, so, or Paraguay for that.
Fair enough. Nico, we'll close out here. sure. Do you have any last words, anything that you want to leave the audience with before we head off?
Any last words? No, I think it's I think what we've seen with Proto is it's really interesting to see how the industry matures. You see the form factors changing of these machines, and you see the merge with AI and with the power or the energy sector. So I think the future is bright for mining. So that's maybe the last thing I wanted to say. And
okay, yeah. I have a last question for you. Where can people go find you in person? What next conferences are you planning to go to?
Oh, in person, yeah. So that's going to be Bitcoin Amsterdam. So the first part of this year, I traveled a lot, and I decided that the coming weeks I'll stay put and execute. I need to do some work. So
yeah, you've got to make some money, not just splurge it at conference.
Yeah, so it's been planting a lot of seeds, so you need to grow the plants as well, right? So
yeah, you got to water those,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, so Bitcoin Amsterdam is going to be the first one.
All right, guys, you heard it here. Go find Nico at Bitcoin Amsterdam. He's a great chap to know. Absolutely. Thank you so much, Nico, for your time and for your knowledge.
Yeah, thanks
pretty
for
sure
me.
We're going to have you on a... thank you. Pretty sure we're going to have you on a fourth time sometime soon to do this again. Go follow his newsletter. Check out the premium section as well. Do you offer like a free trial on the premium thing or no? Can people check it out for free on a
sometimes
version?
I open it up and I share it, but the free trial I haven't implemented yet. It's maybe something I can consider, yeah.
Yeah, maybe you should. Yeah. Cool.
Sometimes I open it up and all right.
Then you can check it out. Cool. Guys, have a lovely evening or day or night or morning or whatever the time is. See you next time. Cheers. Thank you, Nico.